Bryce. We had a lot of fun this week. You are my Valentine. I did not know how strong you are. You lifted me up to a whole new level and you made me feel celebrated. So, what do I have to say? I am looking forward to talking with you, kicking it, having an organic conversation about whatever the heck we want to talk about. I'm excited for everyone to tune in. And I want to say, Bryce, you're special. You make me feel loved. You make me feel celebrated. And you make me feel like, yes, we need more people like us that are going to be us, do our thing. And you make me feel like you're from my planet. And I feel my normal is normal when I'm with you. You make me feel like I can be myself and bring out that highest authentic Nora self that it's not easy for me to do sometimes. So thank you. And keep it healthy. Nora knows best. I'll keep you plugged in, but until then, it's a purple podcast.
It's the purple pants podcast. You better get your headphones and listen up quick. Ooh. It's the purple pants podcast. You better listen in public, might make your stomach hurt. Ooh. It's the purple pants podcast. You're trying to unwind. You better get that box wine. It's the Purple Pants Podcast. You're trying to get your snack. You better hurry right back, though. It's the Purple Pants. It's the Purple Pants. Hi, everyone, and welcome to this week's episode of the Purple Pants Podcast. I am your host, Bryce Isaiah, and what's going on? Yes, we is back for another episode, and I am so excited. Baby boy is on cloud nine. I feel like I didn't play Survivor when it's at war. You know, busy as a big boy. Wait, you know, I'm just so rude. How's everybody doing? How's your week going? You know, I hope this brightens up your week, because you know we got a new episode. You know, I am bequeathing you positive vibes. But listen, baby boy been busy as a bee. I've been running around like a chicken without a head or legs or wings. I'm just going in a circle. Yeah, I don't know what I'm doing. You know, last week was the premiere of Survivor Season 40, Winners at War. And you know my friend Wendeezy, we had a proch. Not a proch. What is a proch? Okay. A watch party here in Philly. And it was Lichiani. Okay. It was a whole situation. It was so much fun. And we had so many people come and support us. We had a lot of survivors come in. We had Rodney Lavoy. We had Nora. We had Julia Carter. We had Missy. We had Jervis. We had Russell Swans. We had, of course, Wendell, myself. We had some Big Brother. We had Kimmy from Big Brother. We had Ed from The Circle. Ooh, let me tell you about Ed from The Circle. He crazy, y'all. I love Ed. And he brought some zaddies with him, too. Listen, it was a whole situation. So many of the Purple Pants posse was in the building. I couldn't breathe. You know, I couldn't even watch the episode because I was so concerned. Running around, making sure everybody was good, making sure everybody could see, make sure everybody get their photos. Who you want a photo with? You want Wendell? I go get Wendell. Wendell! You want a photo with Rodney? Rodney! I'm running around like I was just doing so much, but it was such a great time, such a great turnout. And you know, Missy, from last season, season 39, Idols of the Island, she was there, and she actually brought her GoPro, and she kind of sort of filmed a lot of the behind the scenes on her YouTube, which is available now. I'll make sure I post the link. I posted it to my story. I know Wendell posted it to his page, but yeah, it's so fun to like see us setting up, you know, seeing the event space and as it fills up. It was just like such a great time. I literally had so much fun. I felt so much love. I was so excited to watch Wendell play, to see all the great survivors play. It was such a great time. Yes. But listen, enough about that, because we got to get into this week's episode. But listen, if this is your first time listening, welcome to the Purple Pants Podcast. If you could subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcasts, you know, give us a rating, write a review, show your baby boy some love. That would be much appreciative. You know, if you could bequeath that upon me, okay? But yes, so let's get into the episode this week. We got the church announcements. We have a jam
packed menu. We are back this week because you know we are covering Winners at War here on the Purple Pants Podcast. So we've got Survivor News with our boy Jack Atkins. I got a new show I want to talk about. It's called McMillions on HBO. We got The Prodigal Son. We got 60 Days In. We got Life After Lockup. Whew! We got the Purple Pants Picks. We got Advice with Bryce. And we got the Freak of the Week. Ooh, we got the Freak of the Week. Okay, so listen, let's get into these church announcements. The first church announcement I want to put out there is to say, hey, listen, we doing it again. We having another watch party this week at 312 Lounge in Philadelphia. If you're in the Philadelphia area, I know when this podcast comes out, it'll be Tuesday. So it'll literally be the next day. But if you can make it happen, show some love. Yes, click the link in my bio or Wendell's bio to get the tickets now. You know, all of the tickets proceeds go to our South Africa trip, the Nailady Christian Academy. It's an amazing, amazing cause. It's like very special to my heart, Wendell's heart, and you know, even Wendell has these custom buffs for season 40, and they are the South Africa flag. It is amazing. So come on out and party with us. Watch party, get it popping. You never know who might pop on out. Second on the church announcements, on Valentine's Day this year, February 14th, I released a new single called You a Lie. It is available on iTunes, Spotify, Napster. My Uncle Pookie got it. You know, listen, it's a different vibe. You know, it's, you know, about a growing pain, you know, relationships, they don't work. And it's just from my perspective, it's raw and real. So listen, you maybe you can relate. So check it out. You a Lie. It is available on iTunes. Let me know if you got it. Tweet it. Come on. Put it in the story. Tweet me. Write me. Let me know what you think. I greatly appreciate it. And third on the church announcements, I just want to encourage my Purple Pants posse to keep mother effing pushing, okay? Whether you at work and they getting on your nerves, keep pushing through. You at school, they getting on your nerves, keep pushing through. You at home and them kids is getting on your nerves, keep pushing through, okay? We is making it, Purple Pants posse, no matter what we are dealing with, family drama, friend drama, work, school, your car, anything. We're going to get through it. And as long as we have that mindset to get through it, we can get through it. Don't get boggled down and like you can't. The light is at the end of the tunnel. And I just want to encourage my Purple Pants posse to keep pushing. I am bequeathing that to you. I just felt it in my spirit. So I just had to tell my Purple Pants posse. And you know what? I'm talking to the Purple Pants posse. You know, I'm really talking to myself as well. Keep pushing. No matter what, who cares? Nobody might be seeing us grind right now, but definitely us grinding it out will pay off in the long run. I truly believe that. So Purple Pants posse, keep it pushing. Okay, we can do it. You in school, them finals, the homework they catching up to you. You know, listen, keep pushing. You can do it. I know you can. I got you. We got you. Cause we what? Cause we go together. And that's going to conclude this week's church announcements. All right, now let's get into the menu. All right, guys, and we are back. This is our first time covering this season, so you know we had to bring our baby boy, Jack John, aka Wendell's biggest fan, John Atkins, back to the podcast to do some Survivor news. Jack Atkins, how are you today?
What's up, man? I'm good. I'm happy to be back. Happy to have another season of Survivor on the air. Potentially going to be one of the best seasons of all time. So, I mean, I'm excited. How are you feeling?
I am ready to go. Yes, I, cover your mouth.
I'm sorry. It's cold out here in Chicago, man. It's chilly.
Chile.
Yeah, when I say Chile, I'm not talking about, I'm talking about the weather.
Yeah, so I actually had a chance to finally watch the episode. You know, we had our watch party, so it was a bit hectic. So I could not actually watch the episode when it premiered, but I just actually sat down and I watched it. And it, like, you know, these, I call them the first two episodes, but it's really the first episode. It really was rather riveting. I was, you know, holding on to the edge of my seat.
Yeah, and the edge of extinction too. I look forward to hearing more about that watch party. I wish I had been able to pull up to Philly, but I knew I was popping. I know it was lit. It was a lituation. But yeah, you're right. The episode was, I mean, it was fantastic. And even the tribals themselves, nothing was too crazy, but I was really just on the edge of my seat the whole time. So like, just going into the season, first things first. What's like your mood entering this season? It's one of the biggest seasons of all time. How are you feeling?
It's a lot going on because obviously, you know, our baby boy is out there. So that really pulls on my heartstring. But then it's like, you know, aside from Wendell, I've got, you know, the Phoenix rising herself, Poverty. You've got Sandra. Who doesn't love Sandra? You know, you got my Akagian dogs out there. You know, yep. Tony Sarah. You know, yep. You got Jeremy out there.
You Nick Licious.
You got Nick Licious out there.
But no Underwood.
No Underwood, you know. But that's, you know, we got Yule out there. Yeah. And watching Yule this episode, Jack, you know, you remind me a lot of Yule. I just have to say that. Yule is extremely smart, and you, Jack, is extremely smart, y'all. And then we got, you know, Michelle Fitzgerald out there. We've got Kim, you know, out there looking like a model coming off the boat with her straw hat. And I said, okay, Kim. So, I mean, there's really a lot of excitement. There's like so many characters for us to root for.
Yeah, I mean, each episode and each boot is going to be so impactful. Whether or not it's like a personal favorite of yours, someone you know, obviously like Wendell or Sarah or Tony, but even people you don't know as well, they all have just such amazing legacies from the show that each vote out is going to be like, mean so much to me. I think that's why this season is really going to be one of the best of all time, no doubt.
Definitely. So give us the rundown.
Yes, I mean, so when they hop off the boat, Bryce, you know, Jeff says you're playing for $2 million. What do you think the thought process going through everyone's head is? Like, obviously, they're super excited. Do you think that the extra million really adds, like, a layer of, like, cutthroat gameplay and willing? Because like, a lot of them out there are already friends. Do you think that extra million is going to really bring the gameplay to a whole new level? Or what's the feeling?
I think it creates the term frenemy. Because $2 million, I cut my mom through. Okay, I run that check. But yeah, like definitely adds to the layer. It just, I don't even know what I want to say. Ups the ante.
Oh, you might be a part of that poker alliance, Bryce. With these terms, come on.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, come on. Full blush. Yeah, yeah. No, it's not.
No, you're right.
Okay. Good.
No. And $2 million. I mean, people out here, you know, $2 million is a lot of money. People would do some crazy things just in real life to get $2 million. So I'm just thinking about, obviously, you have to play within the rules of the game, but I think a lot of people are going to be willing to go over the top, and it's going to lead to a lot of chaos and a lot of drama. And then we also see, Bryce, we got the Edge of Extinction's back, and we also have the introduction of fire tokens, and we see them come into the episode, especially with Natalie out on the Edge of Extinction trading for some fire tokens. What are your thoughts on the return of the Edge of Extinction, and then what are you thinking about these new fire tokens?
So I was excited for Edge of Extinction because I like, it's almost as if like it gives the underdog a shot. If you were voted out early, you have a shot to come in the game. So although a lot of people out there do not like Edge of Extinction, I am here for Edge of Extinction, especially for WAW, because it's like you get to still see your favorite people if and when they go to Edge of Extinction. However, the fire tokens, when I was reading about them, I was excited about it. But after this episode when Natalie was reading the thing, baby boy was confused. Like, you know, you get a token if you will it to somebody else, but then they gotta take it back and give you the two. I'm like, it's a lot. It was a lot for me.
Yeah, and Jeff was out here. He's like, oh, you could bequeath these tokens. I was like, Jeff. What are you saying, man?
I had to pause the episode. Bequeath? I didn't know what that meant.
I think I actually saw something that like Google searches on the word bequeath just went up super high during the episode. I think everyone was wondering. But yeah, I think the fire tokens will be interesting, but I don't know. The prices are just so, they're so advantage skewed, I feel like. Like, if you're Sandra and you're getting offered an idol for one fire token,
right,
it's a no-brainer. It's not a hard decision, but, so.
See, the thing that I'm thinking about is, like, if I were to play, because I feel like soon they're going to find out that people are sending idols over, right? So then it's almost like, well, shoot, I might as well just, like, I feel like it's going to change the game in the sense of, like, I not only, like, I want to get rid of you to get rid of you, but I might get rid of you. Like, say if we were playing Jack and, like, I know I had to turn the tables on you, I might be like, well, shit, I'm going to get rid of Jack because he might be able to go on Edge of Extinction and send something over to me. So it kind of, like, flips the game on its head.
And I could bequeath my fire tokens to you right off the bat.
Yes.
But I guess that's a good point, because maybe at some point, if you wanted to stab me in the back and get my fire tokens, you have to do it in a way that I'm not going to know about.
Right.
So I'll keep bequeathing shit upon you. Yes. So that, because if I knew you stabbed me in the back, I'd probably bequeath them to someone else.
Yes, you would bequeath them to me, and I'll need you to bequeath me everything that's bequeathed me.
Yeah, it would be unbequeathable, man. Come on. Yeah, I think the fire tokens will be a fun twist. We'll see how it goes. I mean, obviously, a pretty common complaint has been the oversaturation of advantages and idols and stuff like that. But hopefully, somehow, they find a good balance. And then Edge of Extinction. I know I'm like with a lot of people in the Survivor community. I'm not the biggest fan, but I think if there's any season to do it, this is a good one because it gives the winners a chance to, like, stick around, stay on our screens. And then I think a lot of the winners are smart enough to realize that it's kind of dangerous. So I don't know if we'll have a repeat of season 38 where the Edge of Extinction winner comes back and wins the whole thing. So I think it'll just kind of be a fun way to keep some of our favorites around.
Bequeath.
Yeah, they're just going to be out there bequeathing you. Like, what more could you ask for? And then, so, I mean, let's just jump right into some of the strategy of the episode, because we saw a lot of strategic conversations this episode, especially since we didn't really have any reward challenges. We had 2 hours, just two immunities, I think, and there was a lot of social connections going on, a lot of strategic talk. And I think a lot of one of the highlights of the episode, kind of the driving force behind a lot of the strategy, was the role of pregame connections. And I think Yul articulated this pretty well, basically saying that he's actually in a great position because, and to his surprise, his lack of pregame connections makes him less of a threat. And then you have these different groups like Sarah and Tony going after this poker alliance of, like, Kim, Tyson, and Amber. And then on the other side, on the blue tribe, you have, you know, Natalie and Jeremy getting targeted because of their pregame connection. And then obviously Rob keeps getting mentioned because he's literally married to Amber.
Right.
And we like, even on the red tribe, we see baby boy Wendell. He gets into a great position with some of the other somewhat unconnected people like Sophie, Yul, and Nick. What do you think of this whole, like, the whole idea of pregame connections coming into this? How big of a role do you think they should be playing early on? And then if you're coming in as someone who hasn't really played, say you're coming in Wendell's position as someone who hasn't played with anyone else, how do you kind of navigate through all this?
Well, I definitely think that they are right to target these connections, because these connections ultimately are going to bequeath you $2 million. So I think that it's
true. Good use.
Yeah, so I definitely think that it is smart. However, I don't understand a lot of the reasonings. Like, I understand, like, you know, Adam being so mad, but then, like, just automatically going after Natalie, I just thought was weird. But I definitely think I am here for the people that are not connected. Like, you know, because it just gives people like Sophie a chance to thrive. It gives people like Yul a chance to thrive. It gives people like Nick, you know, it gives people like Wendell and Ben this chance of, like, you know, oh my God, we're going against our idols and these, like, you know, people that have played the game so many times before us. So I definitely am here for it. It definitely is for sure to make an interesting season.
Yeah, it definitely seems like the connected groups are really going to be kind of gunning for each other, and it's going to give the chance for those unconnected players like Wendell to kind of play the middle a little bit and lie low for a little bit and then just execute some strategy early on and have a little bit less of his target on his back because he's not connected. So I'm definitely glad it's not like a case of all the connected people ganging up on the people with no connections. I think it's going to make for a lot of fun strategy here.
Definitely.
And I'm excited to see what the season has in store.
We also see how quick the tide can change. So, like, we see Tyson thinking that he's running the tribe, and then he gets word that, you know, he's on the chopping block, and baby boy quickly bequeaths and gives, you know, Amber and Kim, you know, right under the bus. So, like, it just goes to show you the ever-evolving dynamic of what this, like, this Winners at War game, it just, like, has so many different layers, and I think it's going to be so much fun for us as fans to watch.
Oh yeah, I think it's constantly just things are constantly going to be changing because especially episode one, it was we see people kind of struggling to find like a solid reason on why they should really target someone, especially on the Blue Tribe because they were much more hesitant to throw out a name. But it's kind of like you people attach to any good reason, any episode as a reason to vote someone out just so they can move forward. Like even early on, we see Adam and Denise are off looking for water and just talking game, and then that suddenly puts a major target on their back. So I think the strategy is just going to be. We're gonna see. I think we're gonna see some never before seen strategy, especially even like guys like Yule, who's such a numbers guy, a game theory guy. I think he's gonna be able to not only execute great strategy, but also articulate in a way in like his confessionals that really brings us in as fans and really shows us like a new level of the game.
For sure.
And then I just want to mention Ben really quick. You know, coming into the season, I was a little bit sour on him just because of his first win, but I actually think he's a really fun character, I definitely am open to giving him a chance to really prove himself this season. But we see pretty quickly on that he's a little bit outmatched. What did you think of his conversation with Rob? Where Rob, I thought that was so funny, where Rob was basically just having like a normal conversation and just had Ben sweating and giving away all the information. And then Ben in his confessionals was just like, oh man, this guy's so good.
I thought it was funny. I always, use this term a lot of the times, like, when we've played in South Africa and I've also played in the game of Survivor Philadelphia, where I'm like, I'm so tired of these people being Wendell ties, but really, I did not know that there is a thing called Robert ties. Like, because how easily was, Ben willing to bequeath all of the information to Boston Rob? And I'm like, I don't get it. But I definitely love Ben, and I've been on the opposite side of the naysayers. Ben gets a lot of slack for his season, but I think Ben played a pretty solid game, and I think he's a pretty solid guy. So I'm curious to see his evolution in this
Oh
season.
yeah, and I think what we've seen from him this first episode was a lot of like social and strategic content. You know, we don't really see him looking for idols or anything. And I think his first go around, like he did play a solid game up until like final five, and then it became like he kind of relied on challenges and advantages to win, which kind of soured his victory. But I'm definitely down to like give him another chance, see what he can do this time around, and see if he can really play a good game just socially and strategically. So I'm really open to whatever happens this season. And then ultimately, like at the end of each. I guess each episode within this premiere, if you want to break it into two, we see Natalie go first and we see Amber go in second. Bryce, what are your thoughts both on like the reasoning behind them leaving and then just losing them? I guess they're going to Edge of Extinction, but just losing them from this first 20 already.
So for the reasoning for Natalie, I'm not behind it. I just oftentimes in Survivor, a lot of the times a person of color or female is often always the first out. So it really was disheartening for me to see, Natalie, a female of color, go out. So it kind of like annoyed me a little bit because I'm like, I don't understand the reasoning. But everyone, like they said, everyone here is has a threat. And so I can understand their, relationships with her to Jeremy. So I could kind of understand that. With Kim, for me, I mean, not Kim. What's Boston Rob's wife's name? Is it
Amber.
Kim? Amber. I definitely understand why Amber had to go. And,
Yeah.
for sure, for Sandra to target her for that information. But I just think it's so funny that I was like scrolling through Twitter and I saw this tweet from this Twitter fan called Survivor, but he spells it Survyv. Already, he put up a pretty funny tweet. I thought you would get a kick out of this. He goes, "Reminder that Sandra Diaz-Twine sat out the challenges, screamed at them from the bench, got gifted an idol, ran around strategizing, kept an idol in her pocket, and still didn't get a single vote against her as the
Yeah.
only person to ever win twice."
Oh
And
yeah.
I think that definitely speaks to the level of Sandra's game.
Yeah,
Everyone
Sandra's
calls her,
incredible.
for sure, they call her a one-trick pony from like us watching from the outside, but obviously it just goes to show you how strong her strategic game is in live person. So the queen stays the queen for another episode, but I just
Oh
thought that that
yeah.
was an interesting tweet.
No, yeah, Sandra. I mean, Sandra. I think that tweet really encapsulates everything she does. You know, is she the most dominant physically? No. Is she necessarily like the most social? No. Like she's sassy. She's not everyone. Not everyone's gonna love her. But is she the most like? Is she the sharpest? Just like. objectively, maybe not, but she knows this game. I think the reason people call her a one-trick pony sometimes, maybe, is because I think she does such a good job of diagnosing other people's perceptions and how she fits into that and what she has to do, and then doing that perfectly so that she doesn't have to do anything else. I think she did an incredible job. I think she's one of the only people. Remember during the episode when Kim was like, "I feel like I might be in trouble," and Sandra just laughs in her face. The queen is maybe the only person that could get away with doing that and get 0 votes. She's definitely super impressive.
For sure. So I just either feel like that is going to get Sandra so far in the game, or it's going to end her reign short. So we have to, like, stay tuned to see.
Yeah, I mean, Sandra's impressive, but I think solely based on the fact that she's won twice, I think it's going to be hard for her to make it too far. But I think anything, like, even the fact that she's already made it this far is, like, pretty impressive in my opinion.
Right. Do you feel like, I got the sense, like, when I was watching this episode, that, like, Boston Rob was, like, the godfather. Like, you know how he's just,
oh,
like,
yeah.
Were you lying to me? The fact that you didn't lie to me gains respect. Like, I'm, like,
yeah,
I'm confused.
No, Boston,
like,
Rob.
Go ahead. But I'm just, like, I'm confused. Like, since when you became the judge, the jury, and the trial? You're just one player, Boston Rob. But I just thought that was so interesting that, like, how he, because of who he is in to the game of Survivor, how dominating his force can be, and he's really not even doing anything.
Oh yeah, and we saw that, like, that was a lot of his strategy in past seasons, and you know, it's been a few years, but he still has it. Like, he'll be blunt, like, to your face, just talk right through you. I think it's crazy. I don't know. I guess people are just so scared of him, and he's still so impressive in the challenges too. Despite, you know, he's got a little bit of a dad bod going on.
yes, he does. He got a nice old beard. But the trade is out.
Really impressive.
Trey has got a nice little beer belly, but he's still able to move. throw him yeah. over the barrel.
Yeah. Yeah, he's bequeathing them to the other side. I don't even know. But yeah, and I love his alliance with Parvati. I'm really excited to see how that goes. That's going to be a fun one to watch.
For sure. But I feel like it only can take them so far. There's going to be a matter of time where Parvati is going to, because if they, I just feel like it is a great pre-merge alliance. But I do not see it being an alliance that can last you past the merge. They're too big of a threat. And I already know with this game that because they're winners at war, they're going to have so many tribe swaps, so I'm not sure how far it can take it, but I am pretty impressed by Boston Rob's, his ability to be able to just talk. And I think that sometimes in Survivor is overlooked. And I for sure can say, when I was on Kageon a while ago, that is a strategy I wish I employed. A lot of the times, people, like he said, like, they don't spend the time to talk, and they don't spend the time to get through things. And a lot of the times, it's like you see things happening, and you just, like, I'm gonna just let it be. So I am very much so impressed by his game of just being able to talk. So I you know, Boston Rob, Zad Bob Rob gets a definite, like, kudos in my opinion.
Yeah, way to bequeath the kudos. I think for sure it was an incredible premiere, especially given the fact that none of the tribal councils, like, in a vacuum were that crazy. Like, it wasn't a major blindside. There was no idols, like, no big moves, but the whole episode just came together. And I think at the end of the day, we're just seeing some of the best, I mean, I guess 20 of the best players of all time going out and just playing Survivor at a different level.
Definitely, for sure. I also was cracking up in the beginning, like the first part of the episode, when Jeff goes to Wendell and he's like, "What do you think? What's going on out here?" And Wendell's like, "You know, I see some legends." And then everybody get up. He's like, "I mean, I see a lot of legends. I see 19 legends." Like,
yeah.
Baby boy.
Jeff had me cracking up at the start too. Like, when he was toasting them, he was like, "A drink before war." And I was like, "Jeff, we're not on Game of Thrones, bro. This is Survivor, dude." Definitely. No, Wendell had me cracking up. And then when he saw Sandra too, he was like, "What's up, queen?" She's queen. Like, don't call me that. He was like, "Oh, my bad."
Right. So yeah. It definitely makes for a pretty good first episode of the season. So I'm pretty excited to see what next week brings. Can we anticipate, will you bequeath us with your presence next week, baby boy?
Oh, for sure, yeah. If I don't die in the Chicago cold, yeah. Yes. Nah. I'll be around, and dead serious, Bryce. At the beginning of that episode, when that shit started, I was getting chills, and not cause of the cold, just chills from from Survivor being back on. I'm so excited to be a guest on this podcast weekly and just talking about this episode with you. And I'm super pumped.
Absolutely, we are too. Well, that's going to conclude this week's Survivor News with our baby boy, Jack Atkins, and we will see you next week. All right, moving right along on the menu, I want to talk about this new show that I discovered on HBO. It's called McMillions, okay? It comes on Monday nights, and when I first looked at it, I was like, oh, it's only 3 episodes. But then when I did a little more research, it's 6 episodes. It's a documentary series on HBO, and it basically follows McDonald's. Now, back in the 80s, McDonald's ran this game called Monopoly. Y'all ever see, like, the fast food, like, Monopoly, you peel off, you win a hamburger? And I know currently, like, in my area, we have a grocery store called Acme. Acme does Monopoly in the spring. And my mom and John, we always go crazy for Monopoly. We ain't never win. But we always go crazy for the game. So the McMillions series, there were 2 episodes, and it comes on Monday night. So by the time you hear this podcast, a 3rd episode will be out. So the first episode really kind of sort of breaks down how this investigation came about. So, and it's Bryce, you know what the problem is, y'all? I didn't wet the whistle, okay? Let me wet the whistle, okay? Baby boy getting tongue tied. Whoo, hold on. Oh, ooh, chillag. I'm wetting the whistle this week. You already know. Not Tito's. I just, you know, trying to keep it classy a little bit. I have some Moscato, you know, a little sparkling Moscato, you know, sparkle the tongue. You know, I'm trying to bequeath positive energy. But anyway, hold on, wait, let me wet the whistle again. I'm sorry. All right. So it starts off with the FBI and basically how they opened up this case. And there's this one very charismatic FBI agent. He's like super, super funny. How he was younger, he had an older FBI partner, and basically, like, they were just working on, like, these tax cases, and they were saying, it's so boring. And so he walked over to one of the agent's desks, and basically, it had McDonald's scam. And he asked his partner, like, what is this? And he was like, yeah, somebody sent this in, but we're not really going to work on it. So baby boy took it upon himself to basically call this number. And this number was basically giving him information like, you know, the Monopoly prizes, the big prize on the Monopoly is you can win $1 million. And they're like, it's rigged. And it's rigged by this guy, listen, named Uncle Jerry. And so they started listing, this person listed all the people that won the $1 million. And basically, as he does a little bit more investigation, he can connect all the people together, like they're relatives. So he brings this to his partner, and his partner's like, okay, this might be a little something. This might be something we can work with. So then they kind of sort of break it into the team. Now, what I like about this documentary series is that you have, like, the FBI agents that worked on it. You have the McDonald's representatives who work on it. You have, like, the district attorney who possibly picks up the case. So you get to get all of these interviews of all of these people that basically are working on this case. So they get enough information that they're like, you know what, maybe we possibly can move forward. But they go to the district attorney because they're like, there's no point of pursuing a case if they're not going to pick it up. So they bring the attention to the district attorney. They basically, like, lay it out on the board. Like, listen, these are the McDonald's winning pieces. These are all of the people that won. We've been systematically been able to connect them to each other. Okay? You know how we go together? They can connect them to each other. So they basically, like, okay, like, I feel like it's enough. You know, this could be interesting. And the DA that they're working on at the time, he's like one of the top DAs who, like, you got a crazy case. You're the one that brings it to him. So the first question they really are trying to solve is whether or not McDonald's itself is in on the scheme. Like, if it's somebody in McDonald's basically, like, giving these tickets out. Well, first of all, I wish, you know, my Aunt Debbie, I wish my Uncle Tony would bequeath me $1 million ticket. Okay, listen. So they basically, you know, after they go in and they meet with McDonald's, they basically, like, we don't want a lot of people in on this meeting. We only want the who's of the who. So they go into McDonald's, and McDonald's representative, he is giving, like, interviews as well too. And, you know, he's like, hi, my name is, you know, but watch it. You'll see. It's, I'm trying to tell you, you like true crime kind of sort of detective, like, it's good. So basically they meet with McDonald's, and to McDonald's surprise, they like, watching my pearls. Like, we know nothing about this. This is very much so concerning. And so, which is even more better, which is even more convenient about when the FBI approaches McDonald's. McDonald's is like, well, listen, we getting ready to do another Monopoly game. Like, should we shut it all down? So basically what happens is the FBI and Monopoly, the FBI and McDonald's start working together. They're like, no, we want you to run the game, okay? We want you to run the game. So, and that way we can kind of sort of figure out how this operation is being run. But they are like specifically telling McDonald's, like, this needs to be on a need to know basis, okay? Because if the word gets out and then the person who's stealing it, like, they gonna, like, you know, stop the operation. So while McDonald's continues to run the Monopoly game, they start contacting the winners. Now, they get the PR person, this girl who ran the PR, who contacted all the winners. And basically, the FBI, they create a fake camera crew called the Shamrock. It's like a production company. And so basically, they want to contact these winners and basically get them on interview of their story of how they won and basically use that as evidence. And baby, when I tell you these stories where they are filming these people, whoo, Chile. Like, the stories that they come up with, they have, like, this one guy, I forget his name, forgive me, when you watch, you'll know. They, like, you know, walk him through how he won. And so the lead detective, the young guy who basically kind of sort of started the case, he is posing as like the director. And so the one guy who won the $1 million, he's like, yeah, you know, I wasn't doing nothing that day. And, you know, I decided to go to the local store, you know, get some cigarettes. And, you know, I got the magazine. And so the FBI agent is like, well, what store did you go to? Let's go to the store. So they take the guy to the store and he's holding a magazine and he's like, and this is the mag. So basically it's, you know, it's almost like entrapment, but hold that thought, because I'm gonna get to entrapment on episode 2. So basically they are trying to figure out, they have all these winners, they can connect them that they're related, but they're trying to figure out who the outside source is. So basically Monopoly is like, well, we don't actually run the game, we source this to another company, okay? I forget the name of the company though, but they source it to another company. And so basically they go to the other company, and the other company, they actually run like the state lotteries. So they are they run it through a secure printing place. So they are running all of these like names and the people that work for the company that McDonald's outsources it to, and through the company that the outsourcer outsources the printing to. And so they're trying to like run down the phone logs of all of these people, and this name comes about. And mind you, when the original FBI got the tip, they said it's Uncle Jerry. Okay, he the one that's doing it. Uncle Jerry, call me, give me a Monopoly, please bequeath that to me. Uncle Jerry, listen, I got bills, Uncle Jerry. So they running through the logs and they find this common number that after all, and mind you, they pulled the winning records of all the people that won. And after, like, shortly before they won the ticket and after, chow, it's this number that come up, Jerome. Whoo! And that's how the first episode ends. So basically, we're like, oh my God, did we meet Uncle Jerry? Now, I'm like really into this. Now, I'm texting Wendell. I'm texting my friend Sarah. I'm texting my sister. Like, oh, y'all gotta watch this show. Watch this show. So episode 2 comes out. And so I'm like, okay, it's gonna be a continuation of picking up on what happened. So basically, after we learn in episode 2 who this Jerome guy is, they start basically going into who Jerome is. And so Jerome is this guy. He was an ex-police officer. And they start kind of profiling Jerome's wife, Jerome's relatives. And so it really sort of gets interesting, because now, like, we're still in this investigation, but the FBI is like kind of sort of like, you know, working on who this Jerome guy is. And so, and one of the red flags for the FBI was like, well, if he's a police officer, a lot of times, like, why did he leave the force? Because obviously most police officers, they finish out their tender, they retire. So they find out that Jerome had this, like, he got, like, not MS, it's this other disease that was similar to MS, where he was almost paralyzed. And so he was able to work through the disease and basically, like, got better. But he had a sort of new lease on life, because baby boy thought he was about to die, but he didn't die. So Interesting enough, this lady that he is married to, I forget her name too. Listen, I ain't good with the names on this, but just follow the story. So, after Jerome, Uncle Jerry, but we don't know he Uncle Jerry right now. They're just suspecting that he is. After he gets well, he leaves the force, he starts, you know, basically looking for new work. And so he lands the job of the head security of the place that prints the Monopoly tickets. Ooh, bang, bang. Now, listen to this. His wife at the time, because they're divorced now, but his wife at the time is the head. She is in charge of security at the place that Uncle Jerome works at. Now, I'm thinking like, ooh, now, why they interviewing her? If she worked for the place too, she in on it too. They need to arrest her. So, basically, we kind of sort of learned from her that she is like a stand-up type of woman and that like, if she had any idea that Jerry was doing this, she would have turned him in herself. So, then we start unfolding that like, you know, is Jerome, Uncle Jerry, the one that's actually getting the tickets? And then, baby, it starts getting into the mob ties because the FBI is like, for them to call them Uncle Jerry, normally that's like a form of respect in the mob. So they're thinking maybe it could not be Jerome. Maybe there's this other guy. So then we find out that Jerome is working with this other guy named, I want to say his name is John or Jerry or something. It even could be the same name. So then they're working in connection with the mob. Now, baby, McMillions then turned into, we thinking of somebody at McDonald's. Baby, now the mob is connected. And we learned that the Monopoly McMillions scheme is basically one of the largest profiting organizations from the mob. You know, the mob, they were big on prohibition with the alcohol, running guns, and the McDonald's scheme was like the second biggest scheme of the mob. And so they are interviewing more people. So they really are like talking about how we can get all of these people together. So then they talk about like maybe if we can get this production company that we have made up to entice the winners, say, hey, we're going to do a reunion with all the winners. We're going to bring you to Las Vegas and all family trip to, you know, and so they really want to entice all of these winners. So they get one of this one guy who is like Uncle Jerry's like cousin. And baby, they got him on film and they're interviewing him, asking him like, you know, how did you win the millions? And this MF can't think of nothing. Like he's like, oh, he starts sweating. He like, oh yeah, it was Wednesday. And they're like, you know, well, do you remember what store you went to? He's like, you know, I can't really remember. They're like, okay, well, you remember what time of day you got? Oh, I can't. And so basically, we know that you win $1 million. Hell, if I win 50 cent, 50, 20 years ago, I'm gonna remember what underwear I had on. I'm gonna remember what clothes I had on. And so obviously they're kind of sort of catching him in this lie. So that's my little tidbit on McMillions. That was like the short, brief version of it. It comes on HBO Monday nights. I'm trying to tell y'all, it is juicy. Get into it. All right, we're gonna move right along. Prodigal Son, baby. Whoo! Prodigal Son was good this week. So Malcolm, after Malcolm, you know, then saved the wedding, you know, Mr. Yellow, you know, he was the hero. He was supposed to go on a vacation. He finally takes the vacation. Malcolm is back from the vacation and, you know, he is working, you know, back, you know, no cases, you know, he's been chilling, you know, his mom is so, you know, happy for him that he's not doing any cases. Now, I just want to give you a little tidbit. Now, earlier back when we were working the Junkyard Killer, and a lot of the cause of Malcolm's night terrors are when he discovered a dead body in the box in the basement, and that's when his dad started drugging him, and that's when his dad wanted to take him to the cabin and kill him. So Malcolm has been having like night terrors about this. He always says that there was a girl in the box. Nobody ever believed him. But you know, when Malcolm was working the case of the Junkyard Killer, and basically they had found the bracelet that was in evidence, Malcolm's mom was like so tired of Martin Whitley, her husband, terrorizing the family, that she was like trying to like basically get him another case to put him away for the rest of his life. So she basically stole the photo of the bracelet and held this press conference outside her house around Christmas. Like, I am offering up $1 million reward to anyone who can find me information on this bracelet. So remember that fact. So during this episode, Malcolm is chilling. He with his mom, having dinner with Ainsley, his sister. And basically, he like, well, you know, what are you doing later today? And the mom is like, well, actually, on the tip line, I got a call about somebody might have found some information on the bracelet. And Malcolm like, you gonna go alone? I don't think you should go alone. And so Malcolm goes with his mom. And basically, they say, like, meet in Central Park. So Malcolm and his mom go to Central Park. And they say, meet at the carousel. And so they're there. They don't see anybody. And Malcolm's like, are you sure they didn't say on the carousel or around the carousel? So they start walking to the carousel. They get to the carousel, the lights turn on, and the carousel start going around. And all of a sudden, a dead body is on the carousel. Whoo! Chile. And Jessica Whitley drops her Chanel bag, and basically they're like, oh my God! You know, Malcolm trying to figure out what's going on. They call the police. They get the squad in there. The guy was cut in his throat. So Malcolm is basically like, well, the killer wanted to shut this person up. And basically, they're like, the killer wanted to show you Jessica Whitley. So now they're trying to figure out, why would the killer want to show Jessica Whitley? Okay. Now, fast forward to Ainsley, Malcolm's sister, you know, the wannabe reporter who wasn't that great, but then she did the interview with the dad who almost killed her boyfriend, and she popping. Then, you know, at the wedding, she broke the story. So basically, her news station, she didn't made it inside. Now she is on the nightly news. Okay, congratulations are in order to Ainsley. So Ainsley is getting ready to do her nightly news show, and they get a call. It's a caller from the killer. And mind you, he is calling himself the Carousel Killer. And he's like, I want to talk to Ainsley Whitley on air. Now, mind you, first of all, so y'all just putting any killer on the air, but this news station is hungry for, you know, they want the ratings. So basically, Ainsley is talking to the killer on the air. Meanwhile, Malcolm, his mom, and the detectives are at the news station trying to figure out what's going on. They get a call, like, y'all need to turn the news on because Ainsley on with the killer. So the killer is basically like, you know, Jessica Whitley has all this money, and if she doesn't want another person to die, she needs to follow my instructions, and I want $1 million. And basically, he hang up. So Jessica Whitley is like, oh my God, I killed. Basically, she feels like she got someone killed, because if she never would have offered $1 million, the guy on the carousel would have never died. So Aunt Jessica is like, listen, I would pay $1 million. Okay. I will give him what he wants if nobody else dies. Now, the Lieutenant O'Roy is like, we don't negotiate with hostages, even though it's not a hostage, but we don't negotiate with people like this. This is the NYPD, like, rule. So basically, they like, Jessica, go home, get some sleep, and we're going to be working on this case. Now, they're trying to profile this case, figure out, like, you know, obviously, they feel like this killer has something to do with Martin Whitley. They feel like this must be one of the killers, one of the people that he killed, their family member trying to get back at the Whitley family. Now, mind you, while Jessica Whitley is on her way home, okay, she gets a phone call. Her purse was lost. Okay, just disappeared. You know, all of this. You know, just she lost it. So after Jessica, they sent Jessica home. She, I'm forgetting how this happened, or they told her to meet somewhere, or I feel like the killer might have called her, and basically, I don't know if it was at home, or I forget how she talked to the killer, but the killer was like, listen, bring $1 million to the park, or no, I'm sorry, they tell Jessica to bring $1 million to the park where she first met Malcolm Whitley. So basically, like, they don't negotiate, you know, they don't do all of this stuff. But Jessica is like, listen, I want to do what the killer said. So the killer contacts her and it says, meet me at the park. So unbeknownst to the police department, Jessica goes, gets him, she call her bank. So when they send Jessica home from the police station, she makes a U-turn to and says, go to the bank, and basically withdraws $1 million. Okay, but Jessica, can you bequeath me some coins, Jessica? So she is on her way basically to the park. Malcolm calls his mom and is like, what are you doing? And she's like, nothing. And Malcolm is like, I can tell you're not. Are you? Don't give him the money. So she's like, Malcolm, I just wanted to be over. So she goes to the park, she sits down at the park, and under the bench is, now mind you, the killer, I'm sorry, let me wet the whistle, okay, forgive me, how the killer, while he was on air with Ainsley, said Jessica needs to meet him at the park or meet him where she first met her husband. Now, Malcolm doesn't know where his mom and dad first met, neither does Ainsley. So they're trying to figure that out. Mind you, obviously, Jessica Whitley knows where that is because that's where she met Martin at. So she goes to the park with $1 million. And as she sits on a bench, the phone rings. She picks up the phone and he taped the phone underneath the seat. So he's like, go to the southwest corner of the park. So Jessica, you know, goes to the southwest corner. He's like, make a left. She makes a left and he's like, look up. So she sees the killer and he's got another person that's like tied up. And he's like, if you don't want this person to die, empty the $1 million out in the park. And Jessica's like, $1 million? Now, child, I wish that was the day I was going for a run in New York City. So Jessica, you know, she bequeaths what he says and she starts throwing $1 million out. $1 million all over the place. Child, I wish I was there for 2.3 seconds. So Lieutenant Aroy and Detective Danny is out there. They run to the park. They see Jessica. They're like, Jessica, what are you doing? And so they get Jessica. And then all of a sudden somebody goes, ah! And the killer pushed another person over the edge. And boom, he's dead. So Jessica did all of that stuff for nothing. And, you know, basically he doesn't really want the money. So they're like, you know, Jessica, like, you need to go home. But mind you, when Jessica is back at the park, all of a sudden her purse is there. So they send Jessica home and she's in the car. Meanwhile, they are like trying to figure out. They figure out that the guy that died is another connection to Martin Whitley. So they're like, oh, God. So basically, they get Martin Whitley. Now, Ainsley's news station, they are thirsty for reviews, ratings. So Ainsley calls her dad on air to basically kind of like get some more information about the killer. So the dad is like, oh, hello, so happy to see you, you know, because, you know, Martin crazy. So they basically are trying to get some more information from Martin while giving, like, you know, this story about everything that's happening. And so Martin kind of like is like, well, basically, like, you know, this is definitely somebody, I don't know who, but somebody that wants to, you know, harm our family. If they're coming after mom, they calling the killer, calling you. So basically, they just get more information. And so they think it's these two brothers at one point in time who Martin Whitley killed their mom. But they figure out that it's not the brothers because the police department goes there. Now, mind you, while after Jessica Whitley left the park and, you know, she found her bag there, her phone starts to ring. She's in the car. It's the killer. The killer is like, listen, the only way I'll stop killing people, he's like, look in your bag. I gave you a weapon. He's like, it's almost like a shank, but it's like not metal, so you'll be able to get it into the jail. He's like, I want you to go see your husband and I want you to kill him. And that will stop it all. And Jessica is like, oh, huh, huh, huh. Now, mind you, this has been a goal of Jessica. She really wants Martin Whitley to be dead. So, peep that. So, at the same time, Malcolm is trying to figure out what is the connection to these people and his dad. So, Malcolm goes to see his dad in jail. So, while Malcolm's in jail, meeting with his dad, you know, talking, all of a sudden, his mom comes. And mind you, you know, Malcolm is a profile. So, he is, like, reading his mom's body language. And he's like, what are you doing? He's like, why are you here? You're nervous. Did you talk to the killer again? And she's like, no, Malcolm, I just really need to talk to your father. I really need to talk to your father. So, Malcolm is basically able to get from Jessica that the killer sent her to the jail to kill her dad. To kill his dad. So Malcolm pulls out the shank, essentially, and he's like, what? And so Martin is like, you know what, guys? This could end it all. You guys could kill me. Now, mind you, the one thing that the killer told Jessica was like, I will know if you killed Martin or not. I've got eyes everywhere. And if you don't do this, more people are going to die. Now, mind you, this is another lady that's going missing. And they don't know if she's dead or alive now. And now this is like weighing really heavily on Jessica's heart. So, like, Malcolm takes the shank from the dad and from the mom, and basically it's like, you know, Martin is like, do it. And so Malcolm tells his mom that, like, you know, when I was 5, dad took me to the cabin to kill me. And Jessica is like, just when I thought I couldn't hate you anymore. So the dad is really kind of like provoking them to kill him. And so Malcolm is like, it's really the only way. And then the dad says something to him like, think about the storybook. Now, we like the storybook. I don't get that. So basically, Malcolm stab his dad and the dad gets rushed to the hospital. But they figure out that all of the people that were killed were basically from the hospital, and that the guy that is after all of these people was somebody that Martin Whitley performed surgery on. That although Martin Whitley was the, you know, the surgeon serial killer, he never killed any of his patients. He took his, oh my God, y'all about to kill me, his Hippocratical oath. Am I saying that right? Hippocratical oath. He took it very seriously. So basically, it was this one patient that died of congestive heart failure, and it wasn't anything that he could do. But this killer seems to think that he did. So basically, while he killed, Malcolm killed, stabs the daddy. They rush him to the hospital. And so all of the people are at the hospital, and Malcolm is like watching the hospital. And there's this one guy that basically, after they confirm that he's there, he leaves out. So basically, they think it's him. Boom, boom, boom. They track him down. Lieutenant A-Roy outside. Boom. They get him. They catch him. And basically, they get him. He wanted Martin Whitley dead. He felt like he killed his wife. They really kind of, I can't even talk. They really, Malcolm really kind of like explains to the guy, like, he didn't kill him. My dad wouldn't kill his patients. And so basically he's like, it's done. You know, you should be happy now anyway. So then Malcolm has this flashback of the storybook that the dad told him. And basically, like, when Malcolm was like in high school, he used to go see his dad, take notes of all of these things. And basically, it's like, the storybook is like how Martin shows Malcolm that you can stab somebody and almost penetrate their heart, but they still would be able to live. So they are, obviously, we're assuming that maybe that's the way Malcolm stabbed his dad so his dad wouldn't die. But that's The Prodigal Son this week. Big bang. I'm trying to tell y'all, it's good. It comes on Monday nights on Fox. Get into it. Get into it. Okay, now let's move right along. We are at 60 Days In. 60 Days In was another good episode. So it was a lot going on in 60 Days In. So let's start with Alex. You know, Alex, the Survivor fan, he's been having a hard time in jail. He's not been able to make friends. You know, they gave him a cop haircut. Okay, he got this e-cigarette. All of the people have been taking his e-cigarettes. And so he's just really not being able to fit in. And so the episode starts off where Alex is just waiting in line to get his food, and Alex talks about how when he's waiting in line, people always jump in front of the line. They just jump in front of him. They're like, oh, let me get in. And guess who one of the people is that jumps in front of the line? It's Dennis. Dennis be jumping in front of the line. And basically, like, if you have status in the jail, like, you can essentially do that because people don't want to fight, they don't want any problems. And so that kind of really pushes Alex over the edge. So Alex, on commissary this week, he buys like a $13 radio. And Alex is like, this is the only thing that really kind of gives me peace. It's like, you know, he can just put the radio in and he just walks around the pod. Now we have like Tony and Dennis that say like, all Alex does is walk around the pod. That's so weird. That can't be like good. And so all one day Alex is walking around the pod, okay? And a random inmate that ain't never talked to Alex before is like, hey, I want to listen to 99.7. Alex is like, okay, I'm using it. He's like, but I just really want to listen to 99.7. First of all, bitch, if you don't back away from me, I'm listening to my radio. What makes you think I'm going to give you my radio? That's what Alex should have did. But Alex is like, he just really caught me off guard, and I didn't know what to say. So basically, Alex gives the guy's like, I'll hold it overnight, and I'll give it right back. So Alex gives the guy his radio. Alex bequeaths him the radio. And so Alex go back in his room and he's talking to Bones, and they're like, he's like, do you think I'll get it back? And they're like, man, I don't know, it's jail, why would you do it? Like, and so Alex really just can't take anymore. And so Alex gives the signal, and basically Alex taps out. Alex basically, as like, after he gets tapped out and is on the car ride home, he's like, he really feels like a failure. He just didn't feel like he could connect it. And so mind you, when Alex was leaving the jail after they was pulling him out, Dennis was like, hey yo, Alex, you leaving? And so, like, Quincy runs down. Quincy, a.k.a. Dennis, runs down and gives him a handshake. And in Quincy's interview, he's basically like, I really wish I could have took Alex under my wing. You know, he just didn't really know anybody. You had all of this time, Dennis, to help Alex out, and you didn't want to help Alex out. Now that you see him leaving, now all of a sudden you want to help him out. Boy, bye. So let's get into Dennis and Tony this week. So Dennis and Tony, you know, Dennis is, you know, the 6'6", 4", you know, contestant who's essentially going rogue. Tony is another contestant from, he's a correctional officer in Atlanta. They brought him in because they feel like they're losing men and they really needed somebody to be in there. So Tony is somebody that is well respected. They don't mess with Tony. And basically, so the mission, all of a sudden, Tony and Quincy both get it in their head this week that they need a shank. And And they call shanks in jail, they call it fire, they call it burners, they call it basically anything. And so basically, Tony really wants to get a shank because he wants to get as many shanks out of the jail as possible and to show the production company and to show everyone how easily it is to get a shank. Now, Dennis has come to the conclusion that Tony is a participant. I don't know how Dennis know. And so basically, like, it becomes a competition that, like, Dennis and Tony are now racing to get a shank first. So Tony talks to this, I don't know if y'all remember when Tony first got in and was an intake, there was this crazy guy who lost $20, and this was this other crazy guy was like, I got your $20, what you gonna do? His name was O'Shea, and basically O'Shea is the go-to. You need something, you go to O'Shea. So basically, Tony asked one guy, he was like, I'm really looking for a burner. And all of a sudden, all these people came and approached him. So O'Shea was one of the people that approached Tony and was like, I can get you a burner. Like, what we going to trade it for? And obviously, you know, in jail, they trade commissary for, like, is commissary is a form of, you know, money. So he like, I can get you some peanuts, the roasted peanuts. And O'Shea like, I don't need that, I want some soups. And so Tony like, I can give you 5 soups. O'Shea like, it's gonna cost you 10 soups. And Tony like, well, that's all the soups I got. Well, you want this shank or not? So Dennis sees Tony and O'Shea talking, and basically he like, oh, I know that they're talking about getting a shank, so I really gotta like step my game up to try to get the shank. So, long story short, basically, Tony is able to get the shank first. O'Shea, basically, it's a little metal piece. And, whew, baby, he gets the shank. Now, no sooner does Tony get the shank, these two people in the jail, they start fighting. One is named Versace, and the other, I forget the other person's name. And so, they're going back and forth. Like, what? You ain't going to do it? Like, I mean, all day long. Now, mind you, Tony is, like, nervous now because he's like, hey, yo, take that to the cell. How it's supposed to be handled? And Tony, in his confessional, is like, I'm nervous. Because if they get into a fight and we go on lockdown and they shake our cells down, they're going to find this shank on me. So basically, Versace and this other guy go back and forth, to the point that, whoo, Chile, they get into a fight. And baby, Versace stabs the guy with a shank like 8 times. Like, you can see him like, whoo, it's crazy. Oh, I'm so scared. So that's the men's pod. Now, over in the women's pod this episode, okay, we got our girl Ashley. You know, Ashley is a trustee. She's a friend to the show. Hey, Ashley. So I got a slight bone to pick with you this week, Ashley, but we'll get into that. So Ashley is a trustee. You know, she gets out late. She helps clean. So a lot of the trustees this week are sick. So Ashley nominated Jennifer. So now here we are in 60 days in. We have the first 2 contestants ever to be trustees. So Jennifer is a trustee. A lot of the people really like, you know, enjoy to be a trustee. You get out the jail, you get more freedom. So that's basically what's going on with Jennifer and Ashley this week. Now, you know, our girl Shanice. Now, I said before Shanice be a little annoying, but, you know, Shanice has a gluten problem. They haven't been getting her food right. The jail is a little too crowded for Shanice. Now, this week on Shanice's list of problems, her feet start to swell up, okay? So, mind you, her feet do look like 2 big watermelons. So, Shanice is talking to Jennifer about the way her feet are swelling up. And basically, Jennifer is just like, I'm so tired of Shanice complaining all the time. It's like, it's jail. And so Shanice goes to see a doctor, and basically she comes back and tells Jennifer, like, they don't do nothing. They didn't really do anything for me. It didn't help. And basically Jennifer's like, it's jail. Like, what do you expect? And kind of sort of gets up and walks away. So this kind of sort of creates a rift between Shanice and Jennifer. And so I want to be sympathetic to Shanice, because say, you know, Jennifer and Ashley both say that Shanice is coming off annoying, or she doesn't talk about herself. But I put myself as the viewer in Shanice's shoes. She ain't never been to jail. Like, you know, she's trying to get through the best way that she can. So I can kind of sympathize with Shanice a little bit, although she is annoying. But like, for Jennifer to just dismiss Shanice like that really kind of pissed Shanice off. I really feel like there's a better way to handle her. Like, you know, pull it to the side, let her know, like, girl, listen, this is how you coming off. So Shanice kind of is like, I'm so over Jennifer. She's talking to me that, like, you know, it's just jail. Like, you know, she don't really believe my problems is real. Well, you know, what if I said I don't believe that you are a real born again Christian? And I, ooh. Okay, and so Jennifer goes on like this attack mode. They go to church. There's like a church segment, and Jennifer is up, you know, hallelujah, speaking in tongues, rosho, ba-da-da-da. And like, you know, Shanice is like, who just speaks in tongues all the time? Now, mind you, I kind of sort of agree with Shanice. Now, mind you, I grew up in, you know, a non-denominational church where we shouted, you know, people spoke in tongues, but I never saw somebody speak in tongues the way that Jennifer does on commands. Like, so I do agree with Shanice. And so, mind you, Shanice is just basically like taking shots at Jennifer because it's war now. Now, mind you, Shanice has another issue this episode. So Shanice's roommate, Tiffany, is basically a drug addict. She smokes clone. She snorts cocaine. She do all types of drugs in the jail. And Shanice doesn't really like that in her room. But obviously, Shanice knows where to pick her battles. So Shanice is like, girl, to Tiffany, where you getting all these drugs from? And Tiffany like, Angel. Now, Angel is sort of kind of like the pod boss of the women's pod. The pod boss is basically that rough and tough person that you don't mess with. That basically, like, you know, I'd say Robert Sestorino is the pod boss. Oh, literally the pod boss. Hey, the pod boss of rap. Like, you know, he runs it all. So that's what Angel is. And mind you, she's like, you know, a more of a masculine looking girl. So she don't play. So Shanice doesn't really like the fact that her roommate Tiffany is like so close to Angel. So Shanice is just in her room minding her business, you know, with her feet swelling. She's trying to keep her feet elevated. And Tiffany come in the room and she like, hey, yo, Angel needs some pee. And Shanice is like, what? I ain't giving her no pee. Now, mind you, at the same time that Tiffany says something about this pee, the girl Angel comes over and is just staring in the room. And Shanice is like, I don't really want to give her no pee, but at the same time, I don't want no problems. Like, you know, obviously if this is the pod boss, she could really cause some problems for her. So reluctantly, Shanice gives up the pee. Okay, so she pee in a little canister, pees in the thing, and she gives it to Angel. And so basically, Angel needs this because Angel is coming up for release, and she needs a drug test. She gets a positive drug test, she'll be able to get out. So Shanice gives it a drug test, gives her the pee. After Shanice gives it a pee, Shanice is like, I'm just nervous. Like, what if she don't, you know, pass the drug test? You know, Shanice smokes a little weed back at home. But so she starts getting a little paranoid. So the next day, let me wet the whistle. So the next day, Angel gets out. Angel comes out like, yes, I'm getting out of here. Bye, bitches. And so Shanice is kind of sort of like, wow, she really got out. Shanice is like, I don't really correlate me giving her my pee to her getting out. Like, you know, she had to do other things. However, I could put myself in Shanice's shoes a little bit because, like, here you are in your, you know, if somebody is pressing you something and, like, you don't want to cause any altercations and you don't want to rock the boat and you trying to, like, get in. So I can understand why she would give up the pee. Child, I'd be peeing. I'd pee my heart away. Okay. You need some spit. What else you need? Okay. So after Angel leaves, Shanice walks up to Ashley because they're doing something. They're at the front desk. And so Shanice tells Ashley, I gave Angel my pee. And Ashley's like, what? And so Shanice is like, yeah, she asked for my pee and I gave her my pee. And so, like, Ashley kind of, like, you know, it's like, oh, okay, and walks away. Now, mind you, we go into Ashley's confessional and Ashley is like, I'm a police officer and I don't like people that behave that way. And she's like, I don't really feel like Shanice cares about these girls and I don't feel like, you know, it's not something that I wouldn't done. Now, mind you, Ashley, you know I love you, girl, but I disagree with you on this situation because I feel like that's how you are playing, like, that's how you are a different person than Shanice. And I feel like you're not, and I understand, like, your position, like, you know, we're here to better the program, but, like, you know, Dennis and, you know, Tony are off getting shanks, like, you know, Alex is smoking clone, like, so Shanice is, like, you know, I feel like, although you don't like the way that she's going about it, but Shanice is shedding light to the fact that people are passing off pee in the prison and it could possibly change it. So, but anyway, Ashley is like really, 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 really mad at Shanice. And she's like, I'm ready for Shanice to go. So that's where I disagree with you a little bit, Ashley. I understand from your background, but I feel like if you look at it from Shanice's point of view, how, like, that intimidating, like, you know, position that she was put in, you know, the girl ain't getting food like that anyway. Her feet is swollen. Say she don't give Angel the pee, and the next time she eating, Angel come over there and smack her food. And, like, so I don't know. That's just how I feel, Ashley. Don't be mad. I'm just saying we can agree to disagree, but that's what I feel. So, and listen, it looked like next week, Ashley is trying to get Shanice out of here. So listen, Thursday nights, 10 o'clock A&E. Hoo, hoo, hoo. 60 days in, get into it. Okay, let me wet the whistle. All right. Love After Lockup. This is another, I am really enjoying Love After Lockup because I feel like the psychology and the social worker in me get to come out. So this week we get to see Lacey, Shane, and John. Okay, y'all know who they are. Lacey, Shane, John. So This week's episode, we get to see John. You know that we saw John. He got arrested earlier in the season. He was over. He, like, you know, got a DUI. Lacey recently married Shane while she was engaged to John. She met Shane. You know, y'all know that story, okay? So, Shane was really concerned with John after he saw Lacey was texting him, but as soon as, like, Shane found out that John went away to jail, he was so happy because he felt like he could now, him and Lacey could focus on their life. We also know from previous episodes that right before that Shane and Lacey got married, he got drunk one night and had sex with a random girl, okay? He bequeathed himself to somebody else. And so, this episode, it starts off with John in his rehab house. John, his sister comes to see him, and mind you, John is looking all right, okay? Now, mind you, Shane got a little chunky, but John looking like he losing a little weight, doing a little push-ups, you know, clean and sober, look good on John. John is working again. His sister comes to see him and basically, like, you know, so what happened that night? And basically, he was like, I was really thinking about Lacey, you know, her marrying Shane. It got to me. I started drinking. I went for a drive. I got pulled over. I had drugs on me, you know, but Shane's like, thank God that happened because it gave me an opportunity to get into this recovery house and to really kind of do my time and get myself together. Now, mind you, you know, on this show, everybody gets a confessional. So John's sister gets a confessional. Like, I didn't like Lacey 15 years ago and I don't like her now. She feels like she is manipulating Shane and that Shane just needs to leave her alone. But basically, Shane tells his sister, like, it's easier said than done, but I love her. Like, I can't help the fact that I love her and I am, you know, going to try to get her back. And I want her to divorce Shane and I want her to be with me. And his sister, like, listen, if you go back to jail for her, I'm just letting you know, the family, we ain't gonna support you like that, okay? But Shane is doing good. So we see Lacey and Shane this week. They doing good. They're 3 months married. Shane has a full-time job. You know, he's working. Lacey is, like, so happy with Shane getting out, getting his job. So they go out on a little date night. And, like, they go roller skating. They have such a fun time. Shane busts his behind about 7 to 8 times, just having a really good time. And so at the conclusion of this date, Shane is like, you know, I really just want to tell you something, Lacey's been really weighing on my heart, and I love you, and I don't want to keep any secrets from you, but, like, you know, right before our wedding, I got drunk and I had sex with somebody else. And Lacey's like, what? And he's like, you know, I'm being honest. I wanted to tell you. And Lacey's like, well, you should have told me before we got married to give me the option of whether or not I want to marry you. And Shane's like, I love you. I love you. And Lacey's like, you're pathetic. Like, you're a liar. And then so Lacey goes and says that basically, like, you know, when she first met Shane, when he got out of jail, he promised that he would never hurt her. He promised that he would never, like, you know, do anything. And now all that she thinks is that he's a liar. Well, I'm just saying, girl, now I've been saying this from the get-go. These men's, they get out of jail and they just, you know, they want to bequeath themselves, okay, on anything else. Somebody want to bequeath themselves to, nope, never mind, not doing it. So Lacey is hurt and, like, really, really upset, and basically Lacey drives off and Shane runs outside and he tries to find her, but he can't. So, Angela and Tony. We know Angela and Tony. Tony was cheating on her with the prostitutes. Now, Angela then became the warden of the trailer park. She don't play around. She went out with her sister, her friend, and her buddy, have a couple of drinks. You know, she lied to Tony and said she was staying out all night, but she really was parked outside in the car with her lights on at the end of the driveway. And then basically she ended up going in. She ended up going in and, you know, cuddling with Tony. The next day, Tony's like, I thought you were going to stay at your sister's house. And she's like, well, Tony, I didn't. I just parked at the end of the driveway to see what you were doing. And Tony's like, I can't live like this. Like, you don't trust me. Like, I this is beginning to be too much. And Angela's like, what do you mean it's beginning to be too much? You just was in jail. You just got to follow a little bit of rules. And Tony's like, you just feel like you have to spy on me. And Angela's like, I got to spy on you to make sure that you're doing right. Now, mind you, here's the thing, girl. Why do you want to be with somebody that you got to spy on? Like, I don't have time. This is why I'm not in a relationship. This is why I didn't have no Valentine, okay? I can't bequeath myself to other people that I can't trust. So Tony basically tells us that in all of his relationships, he's all, like, infidelity and impulse control has been a real issue for him. And Angela still seems to believe that Tony has a good heart and that, you know, although she's mad at him, they get into these fights, she still really, like, loves him. Then basically Angela tells us in the confessional that since, you know, Tony bequeathed himself to the prostitutes in the motel, they haven't been sexually active, and that, like, first of all, child, I wish I would be in a relationship and bequeathing myself to my man and prostitutes prostitutes come up in the same sentence, it won't be happening. You could be queef of me out of the sentence, okay? So Angie really wants to work on this relationship. She takes Tony to her church. We get to meet with Brother Joe, Brother John, and Brother Joey. And basically, they go through a little spiritual counseling. Now, mind you, I kind of sort of am here for the spiritual counseling. And basically, Tony admits to all his wrongdoings. And basically, Tony gives us the fact that he was physically abused by his father as a child. His father cheated on his mother. They were divorced. So, the parents had 50-50 custody of the children, and basically that, you know, he lived 50% with his dad, 50% with his mom, and that when he would go to his dad's house, his dad would physically abuse them. He would come back to his mom's house with welts, scars, black eyes, and the mom really couldn't do anything because she was so scared of the dad. And so basically it wasn't until child welfare agency stepped in and removed Tony from they removed Tony from the home, and Tony went to go with his mom. And so basically Brother Joey explains to Tony that you are becoming you saw what your dad did to you, and look what you're doing to Angela, you're hurting her. And then Tony gets a confessional, and he's crying. And mind you, I be thinking Tony lying, but in this confessional, Tony had me, because he was crying, his little chubby self. He basically was saying he does not want to be the person that his dad is, and that it's killing him that he's hurting Angela, and that he wants to try to do better. Okay. That's Angie and Tony. Then we got Lamar and Andrea, the Mormon. You know, she then got knocked up with Lamar. She had a baby with him while he's in jail. Lamar's from California, the gang life. You know, Andrea is a Mormon living in Utah. When Lamar first got out, she moved the family to Los Angeles, but she felt like it wasn't safe. So they moved to Utah. They were in Utah for a period of time, and Lamar couldn't do it, so he left. Now, this is the first time Lamar is back in Utah, and basically, Andrea is having him sleep on the couch because she ain't giving up the nook. She's not letting Lamar bequeath himself on her. Let me wet the whistle. It's just a lot going on with their relationship. You know, they try to go to Bible study. Lamar was trying to get Bible study turned up with some beer. The Mormons weren't having it. There's just a lot of a disconnect. So, to be sweet and nice, Lamar takes Andrea to an Italian restaurant. They get spaghetti. And, Lamar's I'm just trying to do something nice for your baby. And Andrea's and this is where I like Andrea. She reminds me of myself. Even if somebody do something nice for me, if something is weighing on my mind or my heart, I just can't let it go. I have to bring it up. And so Andrea's how do we get to this place? I don't understand. I feel so disconnected. And so Andrea starts really, in her confessional, she says, and mind you, this is her issue right here. She says that when Lamar was in jail, all of his time was with her. Call her nothing. Now that he is gaining his independence, it seems he's spending more time with his brothers. He's spending more time with running the streets, and she doesn't feel connected. They don't live in the same city, and they can't come to an agreement as to where this family should live. Andrea does not want to be married and live in separate households. And so it's really weighing on the relationship. Lamar is this is the first time since I've been 5 years old that I have not had the system in my life, you know, being child protective services, juvenile probation, you know, parole, probation. He's I just want to live my life. Andrea is saying that when Lamar was in jail, he said that he would move to Utah. When he got out of jail, he couldn't move to Utah because he was on parole. Now that he's off parole, he doesn't want to move to Utah. And Andrea is we can just get a divorce and we can move on with our lives. And, you know, Lamar is divorce isn't an option for me. I want to work through these tough times, but it's just so hard. And Andrea is just she's just putting her foot down. Child, you should have put your foot down when you paid $20 to the prison guard to have sex in the closet. That's when you should have put your foot down, girl. But I understand what she's saying. But at the same time, despite it all, I can kind of agree with Lamar a little bit that he's trying to get on his feet. And I really feel that, Andrea really hit that she really bequeathed herself to us this episode when she said that when Lamar was in jail. I really feel Andrea has a control issue, and that when Lamar was in jail, she was able to control him. And I think that that's what she likes so much about him. Now that he's not in jail, she can't control his actions. And I think that that kind of sort of scares her. But I mean, not for nothing, Lamar says that he is financially providing for these kids, the family, so he's doing a lot. So I feel like she needs to give him a little credit on that aspect. But I also get where Andrea is I ain't trying to be sleeping a bit alone by myself every night. So that's, you know, all that's them. Now, whoo, baby, Megan, Michael, and Sarah. Oh, now this is the good one. You know, Megan was in jail. He had two kids and is married to Sarah. Then, you know, he was in his relationship with Megan. Megan slept with his boyfriend. His boyfriend, child, slept with his homie. They're on the outs. Now, Michael has a new girlfriend named Maria. So Michael does not call Sarah or the kids. He finally agrees he's going to come to New York. When he gets to New York, you know, the children are very upset, or the one, the three-year-old is very upset. You know, she goes to live with her grandma. And so basically, while Michael is there, he says, I really want to take the kids with me a couple of days. And Sarah's like, you ain't taking these kids nowhere. And then, like, you know, Michael's like, well, I got a hotel with my friend. And Sarah is thinking that it's Megan, but Michael tells her that he's in a new relationship, and Sarah kind of loses it. And so, like, she kind of, like, flips out. And this whole episode is really, like, them fighting about, like, these kids. And Michael was like, I'm not here to talk about no females. I'm not here to talk about nothing. I'm here to talk about my kids. And so I agree with Michael in that aspect. But at the same time, like, listen, if I'm Sarah and the mother of my kids, you ain't just going to have your person around no random female. Like, I want to know, I need to meet this girl. I need to meet anybody that my kids are around. And Michael just feels like, you know, Sarah is just still in love with him, and that, like, he doesn't call her. He doesn't want to be with her. Okay, if you don't want to be with her, then give her back the phone. Why is she paying for all of this stuff? So they're just really kind of, like, fighting back and forth. And Michael is like, you know, I came down here to be with my kids and you're not letting me. And I don't really think that he is, like, hearing Sarah's point. Now, although I do feel like Sarah still is in love with Michael and is kind of sort of holding the kids over Michael's head, that's another, like, point of way that she can control him. However, I do feel like she has the best interest of her children, and it's like, I just don't want to let them go off with you and I never see them again, and you with some random girl. So Michael goes back to the hotel and kicks it with Maria. Now, I don't like Maria, because Maria just be talking smack about Sarah. Like, you know, if he doesn't call you for months, why, you need to just let it go. Well, mind you, he should be calling her because she has his children. However, Maria does say some, like, smart things to Michael. Like, you need to figure out while you're down here how you can spend one-on-one time with your kids. And Michael is just like, you know, I know the laws. And that, like, you know, Michael reveals that he understands, like, Sarah's point, and that, like, he hurt Sarah, and he's not trying to say that he didn't hurt, and she's probably acting out on emotion. And Michael can relate. He reveals to us that growing up, him and his sister Day Day, his mom and dad were separated, and that, like, you know, if anybody, like, he could have the best time with his dad, and if his dad said anything negative about his mom, Michael was like, I would hate him. So he can understand, like, his daughter's perspective of Michael and why she's so fearful of him. But Michael's like, I don't want that for my children. I want better. But if you want better, Michael, you have to do better. Like, you have to be more present. Maybe if you came down to New York as often as you chasing these cootie cats on the internet, maybe Sarah would have more of a relationship with you to trust you. But you just popping in and out of these kids' life. One of the babies is like 4 months old. I wouldn't let you hold my kitty cat. So Michael was like, you know, if we don't work things out, I'ma just, you know, I'ma have to take it to the courts. Baby, I'm sure, listen, now y'all know me, I work in family court, I do all of that. Michael, first of all, you don't want to go to court, because first of all, Sarah is paying you everything, okay? If you go to a court, they're going to assess you for child support. Oh, and I bet you then that will be an issue. Like, so Michael is playing with fire, and he thinks getting the courts involved is going to help him, child. The courts, I guarantee you, will lean to Sarah's side. You might get some visitation. You might get some more steady visitations, but they are definitely going to assess yourself, your income for child support. They're going to want to drug test you. Like, so today, So Megan, Michael, and Sarah, and child, I guess we can add Maria into this, is becoming my favorite storyline, because I feel like it's work. I feel like I'm at work. But listen, y'all got to get into 60 Days In. It comes on Friday nights, 9 o'clock, WeTV. It's the Purple Pants Picks. You pick, I say. It's the Purple Pants Picks. You pick, I say. So, one of my favorite segments. Here we are. Purple Pants Picks this week. All right. I've got Chesky G4. She writes, what do you think about getting a personal trainer for motivation? I think that can be great. However, I've always had, like, weird experiences with personal trainers. So I think to hold yourself accountable, that could be great. But here's what I would say before you even go out and get a personal trainer. Baby, you better get on YouTube. You better get, I'm not sure what cable provider you have, but here in Philly, I've got Comcast that I need to get rid of. You can go on demand and do different workouts. Like, so there are different ways that you can get a personal trainer for free. There are a lot of personal like, you could go on YouTube and get, like, a workout, you know. But I do understand, like, a workout buddy A lot of the times when I go to the gym, I go to the gym with Rodney. I go to the gym with, like, Wendell. I go to the gym with Joey. And I love that accountability, you know, to be able to work out with somebody. So I definitely think a personal trainer can be something motivating. But listen, sometimes it ain't in the budget. And sometimes you only really need a personal trainer for about a month. Let them teach you some things, and then you do it on your own. But I think a personal trainer can be great for your, you know, meeting the goals that you want. But sometimes I think people are like, oh, a personal trainer's going to be the end all be all. But child, you get a personal trainer, then you'll end up canceling the classes because you don't want to go. So you have to be motivated yourself. But I think there's a lot of different ways out here for free, because, you know, baby boy, it's all about saving the coins, that you can motivate yourself, Chesky. So, you know, that's my thoughts on it. Then we've got Jonathan Rose 10. Hey, I actually met Jonathan Rose at the watch party. Hey, Jonathan. So he writes, I'm moving soon. How would you throw a going away party with your friends if you moved? So mind you, you know, parties are my thing. So I always love a theme party. I would do, like, you know, a goodbye luau, or you could do a packing party. Have your friends over, get some Cheetos, get some pizza, and have your friends pack with you. Like something that is meaningful to your friendship. If you guys always, like, you know, do Taco Tuesdays, maybe do a taco night at night. And you know me, I'm always like, you know, the type of person that I always go above and beyond. Like, I feel like greeting cards are a lost thing in this era. I still send cards out in the mail, birthdays, Valentine's Day, little just thinking about you cards. So maybe, like, invite your friends over for Taco Tuesdays and then write them, like, you know, each an individual card of, like, what that friendship means to you. And then when you guys leave the party, give it to them. Like, something cute, you know, take a little photos, but definitely something, Jonathan, that is, you know, centralized and connected to your friendship, I think is great. But I love a theme party, okay? A little Survivor Wednesday night party, a packing party, something fun that could be, you know, in my opinion, fun. Then we've got Desi Williams. Hey, Desi. She writes, Future and Lori Harvey. She doesn't waste no time. Baby. So I don't know if you remember on the Maiden Voyage, we talked about Lori Harvey. She is the stepdaughter to Steve Harvey, who is married to Marjorie Harvey, who has Lori Harvey. Lori Harvey is gorgeous. She is a gorgeous young lady. She just had her 22nd or 23rd birthday. And baby, she's been connected to the likes of Meek Mills. She's been connected to Diddy. She's been connected to Diddy's son. She's been connected to the Eagle. She's been connected to football play. Child, baby, I wish I'm trying to be a Lori Harvey. I'm just trying to bequeath myself to somebody. So, but now Lori Harvey and the rapper Future have been going strong. Now, we know Future has about 8 different baby moms. He was one time with the singer Ciara. Him and Ciara have a child together, but we know Ciara is now with Russell Williams. They've got a child together, and Ciara just announced that she's pregnant with another child. So Future got kids all over the place. I just hope Lori Harvey don't get knocked up by Mr. Future, because whew, chile, that would be a lot. But yeah, Lori Harvey gets around. But at the same time, I feel like people are so quick to be like, oh my god, she's a slut. She, like, we ain't going slut shame. We don't slut shame here at the pod, Purple Pants Podcast, because if it was a man doing it, they'd be calling him a player. So my thing is, as long as Lori Harvey is playing it safe, okay, do what you want. It's your body, your decision. Live your best life. And baby, if I had your body, I would be doing it 100 times more. Then we've got Australian Ashley writes, are you coming to the rap event in Atlanta? I hope so. Ooh, well, baby, I will be in Atlanta. I believe it's April 29th. So yes, I'll be there. And I hear a lot of other survivors are coming. So that should be fun. So yes, I'll be there, Ashley. I hope to see you there. Then I got this question like 4 times. Maddie H. Dot, Jessica N. Fry, and like 3 other people wrote, I need your take on Love is Blind on Netflix. Now, baby, before I did this podcast, I said, let me go look this up real quick. And I was like, ooh, this gives me like a 90-day fiance. And I know the Purple Pants Posse is like been on me to get into 90-day fiance. But baby boy is so busy. Y'all don't understand. Oh, my weeks. Listen, I work a full-time job. I got 2 part-time jobs. I record this podcast. I try to have an active social life. You know, I try to keep in contact, but it's a lot. So listen, I be trying. So maybe this could be a happy medium for us, Purple Pants Podcast Posse. Maybe if I get into Love is Blind, maybe y'all can, you know, y'all could work with me. So I didn't watch it yet, but I definitely want to get into it. And if you guys see it, let me know. Tweet me. You know, y'all know the routine. Let me know if I should be getting into this. And then I got
Another Purple Pants question from Farron FBC. She writes, Dwayne Wade, Gabrielle Union, and Zaya. So, oh, I love this. So, I talked about this before on the Purple Pants podcast. Dwayne Wade, married to Gabrielle Union, they just had a baby. Dwayne Wade, I think, has four children or three children from previous relationships besides Gabri. And I believe it's his 13-year-old son is basically come out as gay. And basically, he's living his best life. And a lot of people have been backlashing the family about Dwayne's way to support his child. More recently, they came out that his, and I'm only saying his son for the purpose to put it in context, but that his son is no longer going by his born name, and he's going his child is now going by Zaya. I love it. So a non-binary name, and they're in the process of figuring it out. And what I love about it is that Dwayne and Gabby and his brothers are supporting Zaya, and I love it. I'm here for it. But of course, you know, the haters are, you know, obviously like throwing shade their way. They don't agree with how, you know, they feel like, oh, a child is too young to make those decisions. Child, you ain't never too young, baby, because you know what's up when you know what's up, okay? So I am so here, and I love it. And especially, more importantly, is it closer to my heart because Dwayne Wade is an African-American male, and I am an African-American openly gay black man. And so I did not grow up with my dad in my house. And sometimes I wonder what it would be like if I, like, you know, had my dad in my life to support my lifestyle. And again, I've like shared with you guys that I didn't come out until I was like in college, but I always felt supported, but in my opinion, it was always like an unspoken rule that like I just don't bring this up. So I could only imagine being 13 and, you know, feeling how Zaya is feeling, and to have his, like, you know, their parents and the support of the siblings rallying around Zaya. I am so here for it. I love the boldness of the new generation of, like, you know, the children. And mind you, I refer to the children as, like, you know, the LGBTQ community. Like, I just love the bold and the fierceness of the children of this community being so fearless and, like, living who you are. And I really think it has a lot to do with, although social media can be so negative and bullying, I also think it can be so positive, because I think representation is so important. And like for me growing up, like I'm not that old, okay? I'm not that old. I'm in my early to late 20s, okay? Early 30s, but ooh, and I have a birthday coming up this week. And still to this day, I don't really see a lot of positive African-American gay men my age. And like, you know, so I always was scared of getting older because I didn't know what that looked like. And so I think social media has this way of, like, you know, representation and like people that, like, they don't feel alone. So I just love this story. The haters going to hate, let them hate. But Dwayne, please continue and love it and support Zaya. I really feel like you are changing, you're revolutionizing the black community. And I so appreciate that. And that's going to wrap up this week's A Purple Pants podcast. Just a reminder, every Friday or Saturday, I will post to the Purple Pants podcast on Instagram or my Instagram, Bryce Isaiah, a Purple Pants pick, drop a topic of a news headline, a story, you know, some drama, some tea, and, you know, baby boy will look out and help you out. All right. So we are on to Advice with Bryce. Y'all touch my heart with the Advice with Bryce. I just love it. But I got a new Advice with Bryce last Tuesday. It says, hi, Bryce. Looking for some words of encouragement or advice on how to look on the bright side of things, because my wife and I have had a really rough last 2 years and need some help. We've been trying to have kids for about 2.5 years so far, and nothing but sadness and pain. In 2018, we went through both an early miscarriage and then an ectopic pregnancy, which led to the loss of one of my wife's fallopian tubes. After that, we started working with infertility and the IVF practice that has been great, and we are very optimistic about our chances throughout 2019. But after getting great news over this past Christmas that we were finally pregnant again, this time with twins, we suffered yet another devastating loss. We suffered another devastating loss when the 9-week ultrasound found no heartbeats. To say we were lost, shocked, was an understatement. These last couple of weeks have been extremely trying as we attempt to make sense of everything we're going through, and constantly asking ourselves, why us? It's hard to admit, but
during this process, friends and family try to be supportive, but ultimately it's hard to feel like anyone really understands what we're going through. This is especially true when most advice and encouragement boils down to it'll happen, just keep trying, or it wasn't meant to be, or keep praying till it happens. It's sad to say, but those all wind up having us feeling empty. Do you have any topics or how we can put ourselves in a better headspace when thinking about this? We are committed to trying, but I worry the pressure we place on ourselves or being more pessimistic about the situation, it gets harder. Thanks, Dave. Whew. It's so crazy, Dave, because I actually literally like last week, I don't want to put anyone else's business out there, but I actually had a conversation with a close family member of mine about a situation like this. And it's definitely a hard subject to take on. And I want to just say that, you know, I appreciate you wanting any type of advice from me. That means a lot to me. So there's just a lot to unpack in this situation. So I think that most importantly, I think you, Dave, one of your roles is, and unfortunately, sometimes it's like, you know, I hate to put to you into this role, but I feel like I want to, is just because like you just have to love and continue and to support your wife as much as possible. Like, you know, you just like, she is a queen and you just need to continue to encourage her throughout this whole process. However, where does that leave you? Because who's encouraging you? I definitely think support groups. I definitely think marriage counseling. And what I mean by marriage counseling is like, this puts a strain on the relationship, whether you realize it or not. And I think that it is a great place to talk about the situation. And a lot of the times, yeah, some of those answers of advice that you get is like, keep trying, like, you know, it'll happen. But sometimes this world and this life that we live in is very unforgiving. And so sometimes it might not happen. And I don't want to be a Debbie Downer, but sometimes I feel like we actually have to face the truths, and that the reality is that it may not happen. But the reality is that's okay. Like, there is still life after that. There are still so many other options, and there's so many other things that you guys can do. However, I commend you on wanting to continue to try the process, because I, you know me, I say go until the wheels fall off. However, I also say there are a lot of other options. You know me, I am a social worker, and I always say to families that, you know, have fertility issues is that maybe you can foster children. Maybe you can adopt children. And so a lot of the times people are like, oh, I don't want to foster children. I don't want to get connected. I don't want to, like, you know. But sometimes I feel like it is a rewarding situation. And I know that I was dealing with one foster parent in particular who was in a similar situation to you guys, that could not get pregnant, but, you know, wanted to foster. And her reasoning, which really touched me for wanting to foster, was she said the children that she lost, she feels like she wants to give that time and love and energy to these other children. And she didn't foster to adopt. She wanted to give that love and time to other children, so that she could help another mother become a mother again. Now that I remember when she told me that, was I went home that day and cried. I was like, wow, to be so selfless of yourself, to want to do that. It's just crazy. But there are other options of, like, you know, fostering, adopting. And, you know, I think that, you know, considering that is an option in itself. However, everything in life happens for a reason. And sometimes we can't question the reasons of why things happen. And I think a lot of the times we put so much emphasis on the why that we lose focus of the bigger picture in our lives, and that, like, where we are today is just a small capsule of our life. And you never know what the future may hold. I think that it's important to be positive. However, I also think that it is super important to mourn the loss of the children. You know, do something that symbolizes them, because, like, you know, they still were and are your children. And I think a lot of the times with the process of, you know, when people lose children, they don't mourn it. They just try to get over it. They try to decompartmentalize it and put it away, and it eats and it festers. And I think that it's okay for you to be sad. And it's okay to say, like, you know, if somebody says, hey, how you doing? We're not really that great today, but we're trying. And I think the more that you guys can be open, I think that that is healing in itself. And you, I know that you guys feel that you are alone. You definitely are not. There are millions of people out here struggling with this, struggling with the same things that you guys are dealing with. And there are so many different support groups out. And again, sometimes we say social media is the devil. I sometimes feel like social media can be such a positive light. There's so many support groups that you can go and get yourself involved into. There are so many other hobbies. And I think that you guys should continue to still try, is my advice. But my advice is to learn a new hobby. You know what I'm saying? Like, don't, like, you got to, like, spread your wings, and you have to, like, you know, because if you just let this encompass your life and you don't get the desired outcome that you want, it could be devastating. However, if you continue to try but expand your life, join the Big Brother community, give back to the community, do something that, like, brings you happiness, I find that, you know, whatever the outcome is, you'll be more at peace with yourself. I just thank you so much, Dave, for sharing that. I hope that that helps. But y'all always get me with these advices with Bryce, because I literally put myself in your shoes, and I'm just like, you know, I am wishing you many blessings on your continued journey. And whatever the outcome is, I know that you and your wife will be blessed beyond whatever that is that you decide. And sometimes we can't choose what life gives us, but we can make the best of it. And I know that you and your wife can make the best of any situation. And thank you so much for that advice with Bryce. Please email me and let me know what you think. And, like, I would love to hear back from you. But thank you so much. And that's this week's Advice with Bryce. If you guys need an advice with Bryce, you can email me at purplepantspodcast@gmail.com. That's purplepantspodcast@gmail.com. Now on to the freak of the week. This week, it's a cute one. So, you know me, I was minding my business on the Instagram, and I came across John Carroll from Survivor Marquise, his Instagram page. You know, he lives in Omaha, Nebraska, and he runs a goat farm. Well, he's a lawyer, but, you know, on his property, he runs, he's got these goat farms, and I'm probably saying their name wrong, but it's like the Santa May Island goats. They're endangered in species, and he has the largest amount of goats in the world on his property. And recently with the floods in Nebraska, like, half of his property was wiped out, and the goats were endangered because he couldn't provide for them. But literally, it made national attention. He had so much support from so many people donating. He was able to rebuild. The goats are back. And now this time of year is when the goats have babies. And so I've been to John's farm about 4 times. I love it. I'd be with the baby goats. I'd be feeding them. I'd be hurting. Let John put me to work. I'd be queefing myself to John. So the other day, one of the female goats gave birth, and she had triplets. There were 3 of them, and there was one that, and another thing about John is a registered nurse as well too, so mind you, John is my go-to for everything. I got a question about anything, I always go to John. But one of the goats had a baby, had triplets, and one of the goats was like the runt of the triplets. And basically, when the mother gave birth, it was 0 degrees outside, and so the goats were able to walk and get to the mother and breastfeed and kind of like stay warm. But this little baby, little Valentino, aka Taco, was kind of like left out. And, like, you know, it, you know, the saying, survivor of the fittest. And so basically, John and his partner, my Uncle Chad, they took little Taco in to the house. And basically, like, you know, they had to, they had to feed the baby through a tube. Okay, that's where the nurse come in at. Okay, they kept the baby warm. Okay, and and little Taco is walking around now. Taco is doing so good now. And I believe on Saturday, when John weighed little baby Taco, he was 3 pounds and 8 ounces, which is still super small, but, like, that's like almost 2 pounds from when he was born. Little Taco is running all over the place in the house. And so hopefully in a couple of months, he will be able to be outside and fully with the rest of his family. But it's so cute. I can't wait to get down to Nebraska and visit John. So y'all have to go to John's Instagram. It's that John Carroll with 2 R's. So THATJOHNCARROLL. And oh my God, he's got like 3 videos, a little taco. He's so cute. I want a little baby taco. So y'all know what to do. Go find them posts and let John know that baby taco is the freak of the week. I just love stories like that. Ooh, all right. And that means we are at the end of this week's episode. Thank you guys so much for listening. You know, I bequeath myself to you guys every week, and I love the response and the support. So yes, I'm so excited. And you know, this week, this Thursday is my birthday, baby boy. You know, I'm getting up there. I'm getting up in them late 20s. So I'm so excited. I don't even know what I'm doing yet. I got to figure that out. That's the one thing. Don't you hate about birthdays? People are like, what you doing? I don't know. You know, I might want to just lay in my bed, but I definitely am going to do something. You know, baby boy got to wet the whistle to something. So, yes. And so make sure if you guys are listening, if you please subscribe to my podcast, if you could rate it, show your baby boy some love. That really goes a long way. You know, when you see the podcast up, if you could retweet it, you know, if you see it on Facebook, share it, show your baby boy some love. I greatly appreciate it. And you know, you know where to find me. Same time, same place. Issa.
It's the Purple Pants, it's the Purple Pants, it's the Purple Pants Podcast. You better get your headphones and listen up quick. Ooh. It's the Purple Pants Podcast. You better listen in public, might make your stomach hurt. Ooh. It's the Purple Pants Podcast. You're trying to unwind, you better get that box wine. It's the Purple Pants Podcast. You're trying to get your snack, you better hurry right back though. It's the Purple Pants, it's the Purple Pants.